Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to The Joan Kenley Show. We're dedicated to bringing you a program where talking really matters. With our brand of conversation radio, we hope you'll take away some ideas for your own conversations. So spread the word and keep talking. Today's topic is coffee, grounds for health and sustainability. But right now, I'd like to take just a moment here to honor the station's evolution from the Quake to Green 960. I'm so delighted to be on the first radio station in the country entirely devoted to entertain, educate, and motivate people on the need to recycle, sustain, preserve, and protect this place we call Mother Earth. Our program has been on the station for just over a year, and we've chosen our subjects in keeping with all things sustainable, from the personal to the global. And we're proud to say that our listening audience has increased 900% since we first brought you The Joan Kenley Show to these airwaves. And we'd like to say thank you to everyone who's tuning in. And we'd like to hear from you. Any comments about shows you've heard or suggestions about topics you'd like for us to talk about? So, for the first 10 emails we receive, we'll send you a free signed copy of my book, Whose Body Is It Anyway? Smart, Alternative, and Traditional Health Choices for Your Total Well-Being. Just send your emails to joan@joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. And you can also find that address on my website, joankenley.com. In this hour, we'll focus on coffee, grounds for health and sustainability, and we'll delve into why a cup of Java may be just what the doctor will order, the best ways to choose your brand, which blends have the most antioxidants, how coffee tasting and wine tasting have a lot in common, and so very much more. You know, it's been said, a cup of coffee shared with a friend is happiness tasted and time well spent. Oh, I love that. And your time will be well spent today, you know. Coffee has long been at the table of our social and political revolutions, even. It's one of the most popular drinks consumed throughout the world, and it's often how people start each day. I have two coffee connoisseurs in the studio with us who will share their fascinating experiences and expertise, Aurel Lanter and Andy Trindle. Aurel is founder and director of business development of Uncommon Grounds Coffee. She's an entrepreneurial business executive with a long track record of leadership in community-based organizations. In 1984, she co-founded Uncommon Grounds Coffee, based on a sustainable global model. Aurel organized the first sustainable business conference in Berkeley, California, and was a panelist with Fortune Magazine's Women in Leadership Conference. And we're also glad to have Andy Trindle with us. She's a consultant for Vol Cafe Specialty Coffee and Boot Coffee Consulting. She is passionate about sustainability and women's issues within the coffee industry. She's vice president of the International Women's Coffee Alliance and serves on the board of the eCafe Foundation, an organization dedicated to transparency, sustainability, and quality within specialty coffee. Aurel and Andy are going to tell us about their personal journeys and how they started out in this wonderful, robust industry and how they're working in it now. Aurel, let's begin with your story.
Well, the way my evolution into coffee began after 15 years in Aspen, Colorado. One day I decided to move to the Big Island with a couple of friends.
And the Big Island is?
In Hawaii.
And so it's the island of Hawaii.
The island of Hawaii. And my son, who was getting ready to go off to college in Japan. And we lived, all of us, in a very hip coffee shack up Mauka of Captain Cook. Mauka means up in the mountain,
right.
High up, in the heart of Kona coffee country.
So you weren't just a young thing when you got interested
in
this.
I'm still a young thing.
Well, you are, but I mean, you weren't in your teens or your early 20s.
No, it was in my 30s, late 30s, yeah.
Great.
And because we were living in this coffee shack, surrounded by all of these coffee trees, we became immersed in the coffee culture of Kona. the coffee from there, which we call naka oi, which in Hawaiian means the very best.
Okay.
But although everyone in the incestuous world of coffee has very different opinions about what's best.
Well, of course.
So what I call is terrific, somebody else might say is insipid.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that one
okay.
later. So
we stayed in Hawaii for a number of years, and I got involved in the Kona coffee world.
Which is hugely famous.
Very famous, because Kona is a small place with a very well-known coffee.
And not to mention because of the scandal back in
the great Kona
early
sky.
Early 1990s,
right,
yes.
The scandal was
with
about...
Michael Norton.
Kona coffee was sold to some very major roasters across the country, but there was more Kona being sold at very high Kona coffee prices
than
was
produced.
Oh. And technically coffee from, I believe, Panama was being rebagged by...
then that was a scandal.
It was a big scandal.
It was a big scandal.
So then your life moved on from
yes.
there.
Well, what it did was made the Kona coffee world sit up and take notice, and now they're very... You know, anything that's labeled Kona is very closely followed. So.
Right.
Much more so than other origins. Yeah.
Much more so,
mm-hmm.
right.
Interesting.
So then last October, I was asked to be one of 10 international cupping judges.
And tell us what cupping is.
Cupping is the same thing as wine tasting.
Okay.
You slurp and spit. It's very attractive.
Yes.
And you taste coffee.
Mm.
And that's the same way you go into wine when
mm-hmm.
you go up to Napa and Sonoma
sure.
and you taste coffee. We talk about it in the same terms, same terminology. And that's where Andy and I met, where Andy was one of the two top judges in this competition.
But before you got into this competitive cupping situation, you did co-found On Common Grounds back in 84.
1984, with a partner who was an emergency room doc. It was right at the beginning of the coffee revolution, and we knew that people wanted something other than the swill they were drinking in their offices. They were ready for something good, gourmet coffee.
Good.
And we were right at the beginning of the...
And that was in Berkeley, wasn't it?
Berkeley, California.
Wonderful,
of course, where
wonderful.
Else?
Well, this is great. We'll get into a lot more with you later. But Andy, I want to find out about your background and how you traveled your journey to coffee now.
Great. I, like most people, professionals in the coffee industry, sort of fell into coffee. You find very, very passionate people. But almost nobody goes to college or leaves high school thinking, I'm going to be a coffee professional.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so like most people, I fell into it. I was actually a barista starting about 16 years ago.
You were what?
A barista.
I don't know what that is.
The espresso maker behind the espresso bar.
I'm so impressed.
Yes. Well, in Italy, barista is a professional career. Here in the U.S., it's only just starting to get developed. And when I was a barista, we weren't really calling ourselves barista. I'm now... I'm taking the title now since it's become
since it's fashionable.
Since it's become a good thing, exactly.
Yes.
But I was working in coffee shops in high school and college, and I just happened to work for a very great little specialty coffee roasting company in Redwood City, little tiny place called Main Street Coffee Roasting. They just roast on a very small coffee roaster, but very passionate about coffee, and I was just working there, and I don't think I thought about it as a career, but I have no doubt that it sort of set the backdrop for getting very passionate about it. And then I went to acting school, and I do have small professional theater here in San Francisco as well, and I needed a day job.
Absolutely, especially in the San Francisco
yes.
theater market. Everybody needs a day job.
Exactly. So a little over 12 years ago, I was looking for a day job, and my mother happened to be bookkeeping for a pretty well-known coffee taster and trainer and importer in the specialty coffee industry, and she was just talking about her poor daughter who got her first professional gig and was getting paid $250 a week to do theater.
Yes.
And so he offered to give me a job, and I walked in intending to work part-time. And within about 2 months, his partner left the business. I marched into his office, said, I love this business. Can you hire me full-time, and can you mentor me? And that was 12 years ago, and I've just kind of moved on from there, and now I'm a consultant working for two different companies.
Well, when you say you're a consultant, what does that mean?
I do a lot of different things. I'm definitely a taster, or a cupper, as we call it. I do a little green coffee trading. That means I buy and sell green coffee. from countries of origin to roasters like Uncommon Grounds. Mm-hmm. I do marketing of specialty coffee, mm-hmm. writing up origin profiles, creating websites, working with internet coffee auction programs.
Oh, and that we're going to talk about too, because mm-hmm. I had no idea about this internet auction, which I think is going to be a great subject to talk about as we get into the next segment. But first, I'd like to talk about the various ways to make coffee, because there's no single best method. Each of us prefers one to the rest, it seems. Coffee, though, is a part of everyday life for most of us, and it must fit our lifestyles and our pocketbooks along the way. And making coffee is both a ritual and a practical part of life. Unlike tea or cocoa, coffee lends itself readily to many different ways of making it. The drip or filter method is possibly the most widely used today. Finely ground coffee is placed in a paper or reusable cone-shaped device and nearly boiling water poured on top. For the best results, and I've found this out myself, a small quantity of water should be poured on first just to wet the grounds and speed up the release of those natural essential oils. There are countless brands of electric coffee makers which automate this process and in general make a better or more consistent cup of coffee than the manual version I was just talking about. Thermal pitchers are growing in popularity over the glass containers that sit on a hot plate to keep the coffee warm. Then there's the plunger method, said to have been invented in 1933. It extracts the most flavor from the ground beans, so they say. This method is only slightly less convenient than the filter method and is today one of the two fastest growing ways to make a fresh ground brew. For many years, the coffee percolator was a standard piece of equipment in most homes and in mine when I was growing up. The percolator heats the coarsely ground coffee and cold water so that it boils and bubbles up to the top of the unit. It's an excellent way to have the relaxing sound of the Java liquid burbling and gurgling and wafting the aroma of coffee throughout the house. But this causes all the volatile, wonderful flavors to go out of the percolator and into the air. Many say there is possibly no worse way to make fresh coffee than this. Uh-oh. Then there's instant coffee, invented around 1900. It was not marketed commercially, however, until Nescafe launched it in 1938. The quality and diversity of instant coffee have grown dramatically over the years, and instant coffee has a number of advantages over fresh brewed coffee, including ease and convenience. It stays fresher longer. It's hard to damage the flavor, however hard you try, and most of all, it's fast, cheap, and clean. Instant coffee is manufactured just like any other coffee, from ground beans. As we say, though, it's your preference and your choice to make your own kind of brew. So I'd like to remind you that coffee has been around for centuries. Even Johann Sebastian Bach said how sweet coffee tastes, lovelier than a thousand kisses, sweeter than Muscatel wine. Oh, my. Well, we've heard over the years that coffee is not so good for your health. Is this true? You won't want to miss what Aurel and Andy have to say about the benefits of coffee. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level on Green 960 AM, KKGN. What's not to love about the Joan Kenley Show, where talking truly matters, here on 960 KKGN.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you back to the Joan Kenley Show. We're talking today about healthy grounds for coffee. It's been said that coffee is the common person's gold, and like gold, it brings to every person the feeling of luxury and nobility, and I would say especially if it's a good cup of coffee. We'd like to let you know that there are popular misconceptions on the way roasted coffee should be stored and maintained. The enemies of roasted coffee are moisture, air, light, and heat. Storing your coffee away from them will keep it fresher longer. Therefore, an airtight container stored in a cool, dry, dark place is the best environment for your coffee. You have to know that some people store their coffee in the freezer, thinking it's going to keep the coffee fresh. Here are a couple of reasons why storing coffee in your freezer is not such a good idea. Coffee is porous. If given the chance, it can take on the flavors of something in your freezer. And the moisture in your freezer will in turn deteriorate the coffee and make it taste, well, like it's been in a freezer. And when coffee is roasted, the beans release their oils and essences to give the coffee its distinct flavor. You break down these oils by freezing, and so therefore you're removing some of the flavor. How long does coffee stay fresh? Well, a good rule to use is 2 weeks, so maybe you should buy your coffee in small amounts if you're not drinking coffee every day. Our guests today are Aurel Lanter, who is founder and director of business development of Uncommon Grounds Coffee, and Andy Trindle. She's a consultant for Vol Cafe Specialty Coffee and Boot Coffee Consulting. In recent years, coffee has gotten some bad press when it comes to health, but recent studies show that coffee may help in preventing certain diseases. We know that many people drink coffee for its ability to increase alertness and possibly improve short memory recall, but we're not saying our conversation is a directive to drink or not drink coffee. But let's just jump in here and ask Andy, what do you have to say about the question of health and healthiness in drinking coffee?
My theory on health in coffee, as with many things, is that the ultimate guide is moderation. Mm-hmm. That ultimately anything that you enjoy or want to partake in food-wise, drink-wise, is to be moderate with what you're doing. And over the years that I've been in coffee, which is not nearly as long as Aurel, I have seen studies go back and forth. And they've just gone all over. And one day you'll read a report and catch the news that coffee's terrible for you. And then 6 months later, there will be a report that it's amazing for you and there's all these health benefits.
And women that are pregnant can drink decaf but not regular and all that kind of information.
Absolutely. And even with the pregnancy issues for women, I've even read many studies now where that's not even an issue. And even for pregnant women, moderation is perfectly acceptable for caffeinated coffee. So my overview is that I find it very important to follow these reports because it is my industry and I personally consume a lot. But that in general, we have to check our resources and not panic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes headlines are headlines because they want listenership or viewership, and what's sensational or what's new doesn't actually get studied as well as it should be studied.
Every study that I've read says diet, diet, diet. I mean, obesity is, I think, one of the major factors in developing type 2 diabetes.
And so, also what you eat.
And what you eat. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit and talk about some health issues with coffee going way back. In England, mm-hmm. in the early 1700s, there was about 2,000 coffee houses in London, which we think of as a big tea country.
Indeed.
And the English docks at the time were some of the staunchest proponents of drinking coffee because of its healing abilities. Some even considered it a remedy for the plague.
Well, that's a far reach in some
minds. Yeah.
That's headlines in action.
That was headlines in action back then. In the coffee book, there's a couple of books that I'm going to quote from extensively this afternoon.
Tell us what those are.
The coffee book is by Nina Leninger and Gregory Dykem. They have a chapter called Wired, where they break down several hundred chemicals of coffee that give us the zip, the verve, that groovy, edgy, jolting Java sense of well-being and being on top of the world and that nice high. They have an enormously funny sentence in there, and it says, "Caffeine is a little like a criminal suspect who is repeatedly pulled in for questioning, with evidence always too thin to indict, but usually enough to justify continued surveillance."
That's glorious.
So that's what's happened with coffee, always.
All
along. And it goes through these cycles of it's bad for you, it's good for you, it's, you know, so like Andy has suggested, we live our lives pretty similarly, all things in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
So most recent research that we keep abreast of suggests that coffee has a positive effect against liver cancer, type 2 diabetes, gallstones, kidney stones, cirrhosis, possibly Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. It's also been found to be a potent antioxidant due in part to plant phenols. Those are the good things, phenols and melanidins, and those things form when we roast the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So even the Olympic Committee considers it a performance enhancer, which of course it is.
Oh, indeed.
When they say excess, they're always checking athletes for that. However, it's also a diuretic.
Yes, it is.
So it leaves your body and can dehydrate you.
Can I make a quick interjection on a great place to sort of get a compilation of the different studies about the Parkinson's and Alzheimer's? Is a website called www.coffeescience.org.
Oh, thank you so much. That's good for the listeners to know.
Yeah.
And in fact, when they're talking about all these things that could maybe prevent or help, we have to say that decaf works just as well as caffeinated coffee in these circumstances from what they say. But also when they say, well, why should you maybe not drink caffeinated coffee? Well, two of the reasons they've given is that if you have heart palpitations, that wouldn't be good for you, and it might increase blood pressure for some people. So you just have to individually know what your body is saying and telling you when you're drinking these substances, any substance, and always confer with your health advisor. But when we looked at some of how much coffee people drink regularly, maybe they drink 1.5 cups of coffee a day. People aren't really drinking 6 to 8 cups, which what they said, oh, well, you might need 6 to 8 cups of decaf to make it preventative. Well, that might be overkill, and we're back to moderation.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And so here we are looking at the kinds of coffees maybe that would be more healthy than others.
I don't know that there is a particular type of coffee that I could recommend as healthier than another type of coffee.
What about organic versus...
Well, if you're talking about that type of health, okay,
yes.
In terms of organic coffee, I'm a big proponent of organic in pretty much everything that I do. And in many cases, it's not as much about the results on the food or coffee or whatever the product is. It's as much for me about the results on the environment where it's grown and what happens when you're using the chemicals and the pesticides in the fields, and also the health of the workers in the fields who are being exposed to these chemicals.
But and doesn't it have a difference in your body too?
That has not been proven. There are no studies that I am familiar with that have specifically, exclusively tracked the health benefits of organic coffee versus non-organic coffee in a long enough time frame where I would feel comfortable making a statement about health of the consumer and organic coffee.
But see, Aura, what do you
basically
have to say?
With coffee, it's kind of unusual. What you don't eat the cherry, the coffee cherry. You eat the seeds. You drink the seeds. Even when they're spraying trees, the pulp is taken off, and then you roast the seeds, which are roasted at such high temperatures that any pesticide residue, if it's being used, is also burned off.
Interesting.
So basically, what we look at, what Andy and I both, because I'm a big organic proponent in my life as well,
of course you are,
is the environmental aspects of organic in the coffee industry and the workers picking it and what it does to the environment. But as far as the coffee itself,
I just don't think we could make that claim based upon
any studies.
And that's
honest. Yeah. And I mean, I think that some of us who are sustainable and organic and are thinking think that everything labeled organic is going to be better than if it's processed or chemicalized or something. But this is a very good definition for our listeners about what is and isn't true about how the coffee is processed for their consumption.
Well, here, coffee is the third most sprayed product in the world after cotton and tobacco.
That's an amazing
statistic. Kind of frightening,
isn't
it? I know.
Yes.
And in the days that I was living in Kona, there would be signs all along Ali'i Drive, which is the main drive along the ocean, saying no spraying here. Even artificial nutrients that we use to nurture our gardens, in many cases, are made up of primarily petroleum fossil fuels. And the pesticides, which I mentioned, pose no problems to the consumer in the coffee industry because we don't eat the cherry, we eat the seeds.
So some of this is about economics, and some of it is about market placement and PR.
And some of it is about the environment.
Before we wrap up this segment, I'd like to talk a little bit about decaf. I think it's been a mystery to many of my friends about the various ways decaf is processed and sold, and to me as well. So I'd like to put some facts into the program today that we've been looking at. Here's the bottom line on the decaffeinating process. First of all, there are several major types of decaf coffee that you can find. First of all, chemically processed decaf is probably what you find most. It's also called the European process, or KVW. It uses methylene chloride to remove the caffeine. Then there's naturally processed decaf, which uses ethyl acetate, a naturally occurring organic compound found in some fruits. Then there's the Swiss water process, which can be produced anywhere, not just Switzerland, and it's an indirect decaffeination method where beans are soaked in near-boiling water to extract the flavor oils and caffeine. There's also the mountain water process that is exclusive to Mexico. To be considered decaf, a decaffeinated coffee product has to be 97% caffeine-free, whether it's brewed, dripped, or percolated. The only completely caffeine-free coffee, as far as we've been able to determine, is Folgers Instant Freeze-Dried Coffee. What's most important to consider is how you feel when you drink any type of coffee, decaffeinated or not. If your response is jitters, anxiety, or high blood pressure, or if you're already at risk for heart disease, then you might seriously consider drinking a different beverage. "I have measured out my life with coffee spoons," says T.S. Eliot. And that sounds like an interesting way to measure one's life. Well, did you know that women are an integral part of every phase of getting coffee into your cup? But there are some economic issues in this chain of events that many people are not aware of. Stay tuned as Aurel and Andy tell us about their efforts to improve the lives of women in the coffee industry. Keep listening, and we'll keep talking.
Invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show online or on 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5. The Joan Kenley Show. Talk radio your way on 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you back to The Joan Kenley Show. As we said at the top of the program, we'd like to hear from you. Any comments about the shows you've heard or suggestions about topics you'd like for us to talk about? So, for the first 10 emails we receive, we'll send you a free, signed copy of my book, Whose Body Is It Anyway? Smart, Alternative, and Traditional Health Choices for Your Total Well-Being. Just send your emails to Joan at joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. And you can also find that address on my website, joankenley.com. We're talking today about coffee, grounds for health and sustainability. To drink is human. To drink coffee is divine. And we're having some divinely tasty conversation today with Aurel Lanter, who is founder and director of business development of Uncommon Grounds Coffee, and she's an entrepreneurial business executive with a long track of leadership in community-based organizations, and Andy Trindle, who is a consultant for Vol Cafe Specialty Coffee and Boot Coffee Consulting. She is widely knowledgeable about the subjects of sustainability and women's issues within the coffee industry. As we know, there are many women throughout the world who need a voice. The International Women's Coffee Alliance, founded in 2003, is an important new organization that gives women in the coffee industry the forum they so desperately need to tell their stories. With participants from countries ranging from Nicaragua, Rwanda, and the United States, this collection of amazing women provides an incredible exchange of stories about struggle, triumph, and success in the coffee industry and in life. But first, we're going to open the conversation about coffee related to health information and the antioxidants found in the various brews. Aurel, would you like to say something about this?
Well, let me just mention something here about, especially since we're going into issues with women. Ongoing research has not confirmed a relationship between coffee and breast cancer or benign fibrocystic breast disease or calcium loss. It does, however, seem to reduce the risk of suicide. It's a known mood enhancer.
Yes, indeed.
It heightens social skills. It increases self-confidence and, of course, energy. one of the studies that was done in the United Kingdom at the School of Food Biosciences showed that the maximum antioxidant activity was observed in medium-roasted coffee, and the dark coffee had a lower antioxidant activity despite the increase in color.
Well, so we would have thought.
That's something for the West Coast to think about.
Well, we're all dark roasting out here in California.
Might be time to go a little medium, folks.
But it is so interesting to think that something that tastes stronger has less of what we want. So we have to temper this and use what we said in the beginning of the hour, some moderation here in our choices of flavors and what we think is going to be the best for our health.
A little tidbit, too, is dark roasted coffee has less caffeine, and usually people assume that that really strong, bold, smoky flavor is going to wake them up. More technically, it has less caffeine.
Well, a story I've heard is that espresso even has less caffeine than a cup of coffee, even though it is the strongest tasting coffee. Now, is that true, or is it a rumor?
It is true. However, the average size of a regular cup of drip coffee is bigger. Let me just correct myself a little bit. Espresso and coffee are very close, but because of the size proportions of what you order in espresso and drip coffee, it generally works out that an average cup of drip coffee has a little more caffeine than espresso. It is more concentrated in espresso, though.
But I also understood that the process of making espresso is a different way of formulating the compounds of the coffee beans.
Absolutely.
And so that gives you a different expression in your body of what you're drinking.
There's so many different elements that affect the extraction rate of caffeine from coffee, which includes the contact time between the coffee grounds and the water, which in espresso is very, very short, versus in drip coffee, it's very long. The roast degree will affect the caffeine extraction. So it all can play in many, many different ways.
I've been waiting 25 years to hear the answer to
There is no clear answer.
That is so good. Well, let's talk then more about the role of the workers in the coffee fields. We mentioned that most of them are women, and what are their rewards for this work? And tell us just more about how we can look at the fair trade issues and what women are actually doing from the ground up, or the grounds up as it may be, in this industry, because I know both of you are very, very aware of what's happening.
I would like to bring up an organization that I work with, which you already mentioned, which is the International Women's Coffee Alliance. And I'm currently serving as vice president of this organization. And it's only been around for about 3-4 years. But women in coffee, we have discovered, as many, many other industries have discovered, when women come together, stories get told, change starts to happen, and we all help each other. And the IWCA's mission is really just to empower women working in the coffee industry. And certainly women in producing countries have, generally speaking, many more challenges than those of us in the consuming and selling portions of the coffee industry. But the IWCA's mission is actually to engage women in all parts of the coffee industry and to bring us all up, to give us all a voice, and for us all to help each other. So we're getting started, and we have committees forming to help get our mission moving. But there's a lot of issues, and it certainly does get into issues for producing women at origin and some of the hardships they have had over the years.
Does the IWCA have a website?
We do. It is www.womenincoffee.org.
Great. Well, we'll have everybody looking that up, I'm sure. But we want to go on to actually understand, when you say that women are working in the coffee industry, that means the fields, the factories, the roasting plants, the marketing,
the tasting, the all sides of it, absolutely.
Right. And during one of the breaks, you were saying that some of the women are now coming into more executive positions, which will influence the whole tenor of the industry, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Tell us how.
Let a few women get involved and things get done.
There you go.
There's Gay and Garth Smith of Organic Products Trading Company started Cafe Feminino.
Where did they start this?
They work in a number of countries in Central America and Peru on projects for women in poor coffee communities. I met them recently at the Specialty Coffee Association convention in Charlotte, where they were putting on a presentation called The Dark Side of Coffee. They work within a co-op structure, which provides a legal structure and a place to begin women's organizations. The next step is they require fair trade certification because it addresses gender issues and requires the integration of women into the organization.
And maybe the listeners would like to know the definition of fair trade.
Fair trade, as it's one of the many certification programs in coffee, in brief, and I will miss points here, but I did work with them for a while, guarantees a fair price to workers. That is their principal goal. They have some other components to it, which includes sustainability issues, some women's issues, empowerment issues, but their principal thing is a fair price for coffee. And all of the coffee sold through the fair trade certification system is through cooperative farms only.
And you can actually look at a coffee product and it could say
it'll have a fair trade label. And it guarantees the farmers a fair price for the coffee so that they can stay on their farms, put their kids in school, have medical care. So
it's a wonderful philosophy of making everybody win.
The family farms are sustainable because of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is what Gay and Garth have set in place. Once they get this basis for the organization of women who are initially many times too afraid to speak up, so Gay and Garth Smith then set up co-ops. This is throughout Central America and Peru, requiring fair trade certification because it addressed gender issues as well as price issues. Then they worked to get the co-ops organically certified. And then they brought in women agronomists because the women would talk to a woman agronomist where they wouldn't necessarily talk to...
What's an agronomist?
They're the people that help you with the plantings, overseeing your coffee growing.
They're the scientific experts in the field who understand coffee growing.
Exactly.
Well, now we know.
And then they started Café Femenino, which means women's coffee, mm-hmm. which sells coffee from these women's co-ops. When the men realized that women were getting a premium price for their coffee, all of a sudden the women had value in the men's eyes.
Oh,
it completely changed the social structure.
I'd say.
And they began to perceive their women in a new light. Then problems of abuse, health issues exist everywhere in the coffee world. And it's intensified by isolation and poverty because coffee is grown way high up on mountains.
And they get so little money.
And they get so
prices.
Little money. And they're living in shacks and with dirt floors with no health care. So the trend in the industry now is to focus on coffees produced by women to help them become self-sufficient and autonomous, therefore breaking their dependency on men for their survival. And now I'm the director of social programs, and I'm looking at a means for putting these same programs together that they've developed into Papua New Guinea.
It's so exciting to hear what's happening in this incredible industry. And I'm wondering if our audience knows that coffee is one of the most heavily traded commodities in the world, second only to petroleum. Wars have been fought over it. Animal habitats have been destroyed to grow it faster. But can coffee growers actually help save the planet? You'll be inspired by what Aurel and Andy have to share, so stay tuned.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment on Green 960 KKGN. You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show, right here on Green 960 AM, KKGN.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley. Thanks for coming back to The Joan Kenley Show. We're talking today about healthy grounds for coffee. And I love the idea that coffee is best sweetened by good company as we continue this great conversation about coffee with Aurel Lanter of Uncommon Grounds Coffee and Andy Trindle, who is a consultant for Vol Cafe Specialty Coffee and Boot Coffee Consulting. Over the centuries, wars have been fought over this Java brew, and peace has been negotiated over many cups of coffee. In our final segment, we're going to be talking with our guests about the impact coffee can have on global and environmental issues. We'd like to open the conversation now to the issue of sustainability in relationship to the coffee process.
One of the many reasons why I love this industry, and I would imagine it's the same for you, Aurel, is that specialty coffee is one of the most progressive industries as a whole in terms of sustainability. Like, we as a chunk of, as a segment of the greater commercial coffee industry, have come out as an amazing group of people who take our work, and we do everything we can all along the chain of producing coffee and selling coffee and try to make efforts towards sustainability, social justice, environmental protection and care. And I think it's Paul Hawken, a pretty famous...
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. And I wish I had the quote with me. Do you remember this, Aurel? He, at our coffee conference about 4 or 5 years ago, Paul Hawken was our keynote. He was quoted as saying that the specialty coffee industry is one of the most progressive industries he has ever seen in terms of tackling and addressing social and sustainable issues in the world.
That's quite an endorsement.
It's quite an endorsement, and I really wish I had the quote, and it exists out there in the world. And it's one of the reasons why I love this industry, is because we can do so much with the work that we do. And a lot of people drinking their daily cup of coffee probably don't know that.
Or even think about it.
They think about it.
To the grocery store, buy the coffee, and come home and enjoy it. But I think the Bay Area and Seattle are two of the main places in the United States that have coffee stands on every street corner and carts in front of every office building.
You know, the old Folgers started in San Francisco, Hills Brothers, MJB. All of those were coffee roasteries here for many, many years during the Gold Rush.
And the idea was to get the European idea of a great cup of coffee, but in today's coffee world, these prominent coffee makers are trying to use the sustainability model in the way that they're going about their business, which once a company gets bigger, you sometimes find that it loses some of the first promises that it makes to itself. And of course, when a company becomes larger, other people do get involved along the way. But I think their intention is to stay true to their global environmental issues, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And there are coffee companies around the country, as I mentioned before, are very innovative in what they're doing to preserve sustainability.
For instance, on Common Grounds, we've been involved right here in the Bay Area. Birds are at the heart of the controversy over coffee cultivation techniques. And shade-grown coffee provides habitat. Coffee traditionally has grown under a shade canopy of avocado, citrus, other trees that also provided food for the small farmer. We've been a big, Uncommon Grounds has been a big supporter of Ventana, Big Sur, Ornithological for many, many years. We developed a fair trade, organic, shade-grown conservation blend for them, which is sold through Whole Foods in Monterey, Pebble Beach Market, and the four-star Sierra Mar restaurant at Post Ranch. The profits go directly to Ventana, Big Sur, Ornithological. They release the condors into the wilderness and track the migratory birds from the Arctic Circle all the way down to Latin America.
Well, that's a very far-reaching goal and accomplishment.
This is what I love about the specialty coffee industry.
And
people do this.
Yeah, and we also support the Oakland Zoo. We've developed a conservation blend for them that they've used.
Wonderful.
And so this is what small roasteries innovatively do, and we've done it for 22 years now.
And yeah, Uncommon Grounds is one of the original doing that.
Yeah.
And they've sort of paved the way for roasters across the country and in towns all over are doing a lot of these innovative things, very direct programs to benefit particular groups and particular farmers, and it's pretty amazing.
Well, for instance, Pete's in Montclair Village near us asks if you want their grounds that they have used so that you can bring them back and put them in your garden.
Exactly.
So bring your empty bag down and you can pick up the grounds and put them on your plants and have all kinds of nice organic things happening.
Correct.
So when you look at the role of coffee houses in our culture, you mentioned to me once in the break, Andy, that there was an internet access to bidding on coffees of special kinds. And I was wondering if you could tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a newer program over the last few years that's really designed for coffee roasters to benefit from. And there's a couple of different programs, one being the Cup of Excellence, which is a coffee program in which various countries of origin host a Cup of Excellence program. International tasters from around the world will come out. They will spend a week there. They will blind blind cup, blind being that they don't know anything about where the coffees are from mm-hmm. or who's brought the samples in. And they will rank them very over and over. And coffees will go through many, many rounds over the course of 5 days. The top coffees from these programs in the producing countries are then sold on internet auction programs.
Wow.
And these internet auction programs have become quite exciting over the last few years. And now there's also the eCafe Foundation, mm-hmm. which does an Ethiopia coffee auction. And then each of the different countries of origin often have their sort of pre-cup of excellence auction programs. So, for example, there was recently a best of Panama auction. And in this auction, which was very exciting, the top coffee went for $50.25 a pound.
Whoa!
Green means unroasted.
Right.
So this is what the roaster is going to pay.
Oh, my.
And then what consumers will pay in the store or on the websites, I can tell them where to find this coffee, will be probably somewhere $80, $90
a pound?
Roasted, yes.
Now, is this the one with the flower flavors you were
Absolutely.
Talking about in the kitchen?
Exactly.
So everyone, you must hear how Andy tells us about the flavor of this coffee that's going to be $80 or $90 a pound and available on the internet. Flower-tasting coffee.
It's beautiful. It has the fragrance of fresh roses, geranium. It's just lovely. And then it's followed up in the cup with lemon citrus acidity. So very bright, sparkling taste profile and just a little bit of nice smooth body to balance it out. It's beautiful.
Well, you can save your pennies and give yourself the gift of 1 pound a year or something
yes,
like that.
Yes.
But that's rather amazing to imagine that they are working this completely in some of the ways that the vintners worked with wine over the years, isn't
it? Well, just
yes.
like the movie Sideways
yes.
brought Central Coast wines to the forefront of everybody's psyche, coffee, the same exact thing is finally happening in coffee. Because after all, coffee, when you go to a fine restaurant, it's the very last beverage you taste before you leave the door. So coffee should be talked about the same way fine wine is talked about.
Can I say one quick last thing? Is that
yes.
these programs for the boutique top quality coffees, a lot of the people who are participate in them, we believe this is the key to sustainability. That it is not just about that. But if you do not have excellent quality coffee, and if you do not reward and recognize growers for producing excellent quality coffee, then all the other efforts we make in sustainability will not ultimately succeed.
And in fact, as I understand it, there are some films being made about coffee and the coffee industry now, and even a documentary that you were mentioning, Aurel,
mm-hmm.
that would be coming out when? Should we look for it?
She's just going to begin starting her interviews. So
wonderful.
And there's one right now that Black Gold, it's a documentary that has been made. It was actually in the Seattle film circuit, and I believe it's going to start coming around the U.S. And
Great.
There's I think you can go to the website www.blackgold.org.
Well, we'll do
I
that.
Believe. I hope that's correct.
Well, if not, we'll post it on the website,
Excellent.
What is the right one. But this has been a fascinating and fast-moving hour, as if we all needed any more caffeine in the conversation, because it's in the air here in the studio today, and it's of the healthiest kind, the kind of zing you get from women doing great work, from ideas that actually can be carried through, that sustainability, environmental issues can come into a product that's the second largest commodity after petroleum. I mean, it has a lot of meaning to bring this to our listeners today. I want to tell you how you can save some money, conserve energy, and reduce some digestive negative issues related to coffee while still enjoying the great taste you want. I'm talking about cold brewed coffee. This patented system uses regular coffee beans, creating a beverage with some 67% less acid than Java made by conventional hot brewing methods. It's sometimes called the toddy, T-O-D-D-Y, and it's based on a centuries-old cold water brewing process discovered in South America. Cold water, combined with a unique filtration system, extracts the coffee bean's true flavor, but leaves behind bitter oils and biting fatty acids. And refrigerated, cold-brewed coffee concentrate stays fresh for 14 days. To learn more about toddy coffee or cold water coffee, just go to our website or do an online search. And I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. You've informed us, entertained us, and opened our minds about the coffee we love. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you very much.
We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you conversation radio that's co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out more information about today's subject on my website, where all of our programs are archived and downloadable 24/7. Tune in every week as we explore what really matters, with subjects ranging from the personal to the global, and offering some action ideas too. We'd like to hear from you, by the way. Any comments about shows you've heard or suggestions about topics you'd like for us to talk about. So for the first 10 emails we receive, we'll send you a free signed copy of my book, Whose Body Is It Anyway? Smart Alternative and Traditional Health Choices for Your Total Well-Being. Just send your emails to joan@joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y. And you can also find that address on my website, joankenley.com. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy. And here in the studio, program producer Havila Capellas and Angie Yesen, engineer and technical producer. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to tune into our show for more Conversation Radio every Saturday at 5 on Green 960.